Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. In a New Year's tradition, the Tulsa World selects individuals as Tulsans to watch for the upcoming year. 2023 is no exception. This year, one of the selectees is a physician who's also an elected official, a parent to three children under six, a role model, and community-engaged citizen who's a true inspiration. Dr. Christopher McNeil is an emergency medicine resident at Oklahoma State University's College of Osteopathic Medicine, also working toward his master's degree in public health, and now an elected member of the Union Public Schools Board of Education. Dr. McNeil is from a military family and attended high school in Lawton before attending Oklahoma State as a Division I wrestler. His father is a physician's assistant, his mother works in speech pathology, and his elder sister is a nurse practitioner, so he says he learned early about the value of giving back. Over his adult life, in addition to his professional and public service, he's volunteered with programs like Food on the Move, Big Brothers Big Sisters, the Student National Medical Association, and he was also a Schweitzer Fellow, which we'll talk about during the interview. He founded the Oklahoma chapter of Black Men in White Coats to develop mentorship and pipeline programming to achieve better diversity and representation in all healthcare fields. McNeil was appointed to the Union School Board a couple of years ago to fulfill the term of a board member that resigned. As a former Union employee, teacher, and coach, his medical training made him an excellent choice. He was elected to a full term last spring. Dr. Christopher McNeil, emergency medicine physician, Union School Board member, and Tulsan to watch for 2023 is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Christopher McNeil, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd love to start by having you talk about being a Tulsan to watch for 2023. Congratulations on that honor. How did that come to pass, or how did you get selected, or when did you hear about it?
Thank you, sir. It was a surprise to me. I had no idea that was an accolade that I had received. I kind of got the call out of the blue, and it was after a shift. So I was dead tired, and I got a call saying, like, hey, we have a deadline that we'd like to meet in the next 2 weeks, but we'd like to honor you and interview you. When are you going to be around some of the kids and back in Tulsa? And I'm like, probably in a month.
Oh, wow.
But we'll find a way to make it work.
Wow. So you had to squeeze it in there among your many other responsibilities.
Yes, sir.
So kind of like today after a shift. So tell us, what is the life of an emergency room doctor like, at least for you now? And you're currently a resident, so you're in training.
Yes.
And I think a lot of our listeners will understand what a residency is. But for you, explain like in some detail about being an emergency room, emergency medicine trained physician. You're going through that process right now in year two out of... Four. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So not all programs are four, but mine is. And I love that. Just to be able to gain confidence and being able to go through various different predicaments, even just talking to patients about hard times and what it might have happened or transpired, to be able to have big brother, a guardian in those situations, an attending that is, hey, here's how I've done it for years, and be able to offer kind of the master splinter figure is great. And for me, every day has been a really unique adventure because so many of the teammates that I've had in terms of residency and my colleagues, they coach in different styles. So I really love to get that plethora of different skills and different strategies to approach situations. And I get 4 years of that to be the best doctor that I can be.
Wow. Okay. And so I bet you get asked this question a lot, but why emergency medicine?
Yeah, so it's funny because I actually have like a list on my phone of all the different ways that I've been able to answer this. But for me, coming out, it was one of the ways where the individuals that I interact with on a daily basis have direct access to me. And some people are definitely afraid of that. But for medicine and all the things that we've learned and kind of figure out and try to do, it's been phenomenal to be able to have, whether it's 911 or walking in off the street, you can get five-star service just being able to know where I'm at. And that's why I wanted to do medicine. So that aspect, and then, of course, when I'm working, I'm 100% there, I'm 100% involved. And then when I'm home, I'm 100% home. And I feel like that was unique to emergency medicine for me.
Yeah, so you mentioned the first line or being there. Go a little deeper on that, because I think I know what you mean. But for our listeners, you are the first point of contact for many, if not most people, when they have an emergency or think they're having an emergency. You're the first medical provider they're going to see. And so there's not like a wall of, you know, referrals and a trail of different folks that they've seen in order to get to the sort of the specialist up on the hill or whatever. They're seeing you first.
Yeah. medicine is definitely a complex machine. So, and you know that more than anybody, being to be able to help quarterback people through these situations and guide them to, you know, advocates and their team to best promote public health as well as just healthcare literacy. I think emergency medicine kind of gives me the rooms to do that. And that's something I didn't find later on into my medical career, that it's like, wow, this is an aspect that really changes how somebody lives, plays, and exists in the environment, just knowing how to use all the advancements that we have. So I really enjoy that.
And so when patients are in a difficult spot and feel the need to be seen in an emergency room, it's often because they're in great distress or having, you know, incredible physical discomfort or emotional discomfort. But often their condition, or if there is a disease or some situation or syndrome that's happening, mm-hmm. it has not been diagnosed. So you are the first point of probably trying to diagnose many people.
Yeah. And to me, it's fun because in this certain aspect, like, you're always thinking, you're always pushed to that level of, like, I don't have sometimes past medical records to go off of, and I don't really have a script. It's really just being able to figure out, hey, you're in the worst day of your life. How can I make it 1% better? And I feel like that's something that I've done for a long time without medicine. And so it just feels natural to be in that space now.
Wow. So say a little bit more about without medicine. You mean just in terms of your outlook and how you try to approach situations and other people?
Definitely. And medicine wasn't something that was easily accessible for me up front. I remember going to South Africa and meeting an individual, and I was studying for the MCAT at the time. And it's like, man, I really want to do this. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I got to figure it out. And it's like, you know, you're going to be extraordinary because you're going through an extraordinary circumstance, and then you're going to be able to provide extraordinary care. And I always took that as something like to be a regular person, but to go through an extraordinary circumstance. I myself don't have to be special, but I can create a special opportunity for somebody else. And I like that. I really enjoy that aspect of what I get to do.
What a beautiful outlook. Wait, tell us about your time in South Africa. When was that and what were you doing there?
It's funny because in any particular situation, you think about, okay, how does one become a physician or go into medical school? It's almost kind of cookie cutter of you have some type of higher level science degree like biology or chemistry, and then you use that to be able to get the accolades you need to go into medicine. So that didn't happen for me right away. So I had this biology degree, and I wasn't going to SeaWorld. I wasn't going to tell people about the birds and the bees. I was going to go be a business consultant because I went and got my master's in entrepreneurship. And it was definitely something I had never planned to do. The mentor that I wanted to go into and find a way to get into medicine when I didn't get accepted right away happened to be in terms of innovation. He was in entrepreneurial science, and Dr. Ruben Pillay. And so I followed him and found a way to get my first class in my master's degree, which had to be done in 1 year, was in Cape Town, South Africa, in the townships. And so we worked with at-risk entrepreneurs about how to find a way to make their business more successful. And so me coming in with absolutely no business experience, and I can tell you a lot about photosynthesis, but I really can't tell you much about accounting. It was really interesting because a lot of individuals would come to the meetings and they would wear the suit, they would have the nice car, or somebody would drive the nice car, and they would bring a briefcase, but there was nothing inside. So it's kind of like we both had this, you know, like Jason Bourne double identity thing where we knew nothing, but we were there, you know, wanting to get value from each other, and it worked out.
Wow. And so those experiences working in the townships in Cape Town, what did you take away from there?
There's a lot. There's a lot to uncover. And what I would say was most particular is, you know, what we see as not only an extreme level of poverty, but I also be able to see that right next to maybe like a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, which I've never seen in real life until I went there. And to be able to see those things right next to each other, but individuals in two separate worlds finding ways to make ends meet. And so what I thought was super interesting, Busa Siwe was my, I guess, client. And I was her consultant. And she made these things called fish cakes. And so they use fish oil to be able to make these round roll breads, almost like what you would see at Golden Corral that are laid out. Mm-hmm. And the time of day that she got up, she knew that the smell from the bread would entice people to buy it more. And so, like, learning those things, the little nuances she did to be able to bring more food to the table, and then how that just kind of worked in the overall landscape of Cape Town was super unique because you have this bustling community of individuals where she can make this bread and make, you know, sense, But at the end of the day, it was very little. She made very little. But she, in terms of the impact she had, was a lot. Because there's people around here who would say, like, hey, that's a really good idea. I'm going to do the same thing, and I'm going to do it on this side of the block. So no barriers to entry. That means whatever success that she had, she almost had to share it with her community. But she also had to find a way to create a competitive edge. So you have that, and then you have, like, the most expensive or the most extravagant mall in the world across the street. And then you're able to see, like, almost a completely different lifestyle. And the way that Cape Town was set up, it was almost kind of like a Target. So you would have individuals who maybe not have a ton of access to resources on the outside. Then as you get to the middle, you have the population of wealth that skyrockets. So it was really unique to see. And then to bring that back home to America, it's like, wow, the problems that I can solve exist, whether it be a doctor or whether it be just an average person, like, they're right down the street. They're in my backyard. You know, they're on, you know, 61st Street or 71st Street while I'm driving down. So it was really cool to be able to see and connect that. And I think that's an experience a lot of people should have, too.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Chu, and my guest today is Dr. Christopher McNeil, who is an emergency medicine resident at OSU Medical Center. He is also an elected board member of the Union School Board and has been identified as a Tulsan to watch by the Tulsa World for 2023. And we're talking with Dr. McNeil about his journey in healthcare and as now a public official as well. And Christopher, I also, just for the sake of our listeners, like, what's, there's no typical ER shift, I know that, or ED shift, emergency department or emergency room, we tend to use those interchangeably, but you've just come off a shift that I think was fairly busy, but what's it like? I mean, what's the spectrum of things you can see on just a single shift?
Wow. You know, it's insane because our interpretation of emergency is so unique. So we train for the absolute worst case scenario, having to, you know, restart somebody's heart, somebody's not breathing, et cetera. But what we interpret as an emergency is very different. You know, it's cold outside and I need a sandwich. That's somebody's emergency. And so I might do a lot of that in a shift. And then towards the end where, you know, you're wrapping things up and there's 30 minutes left in the shift, but the other team hasn't come on yet. Now somebody stops breathing and you have to be wide awake, ready to go, ready to optimize all of your skills in one instance when you're dead tired and be able to save somebody's life. So it's insane. But at the end of the day, it's like, man, you know, that really makes me prepared as a parent, too, because I feel like my daughter is the same way. You never know, you know, what they're going to change their mind or what they're going to do. And, you know, and I love that because my family, my neighbors, they see me as, you know, if Chris is around, then things are going to be OK. And that to me is definitely a term of endearment to be able to have that and to offer that as a value to the people around me.
I love the analogy to parenting. And since our listeners may not know, but you have three children under the age of six.
Yes.
So it's like you have your own mini emergency ward there trying to keep things running smoothly. So, Chris, you have also, one thing I really wanted to talk to you about was you were a Schweitzer Fellow. Tell our listeners about that. And that program is affiliated or based here at the University of Tulsa, actually. But they take graduate health students from all over Tulsa, really, the different universities here, and engage them in projects. But tell us about the Schweitzer Fellowship and, I guess, what you did.
Yeah. So the Schweitzer Fellowship really brought in a culmination of things that existed before medicine. I was looking to find in medicine and then allowed me to advance what I do in medicine now. So what I did is I went to McLean High School. And at McLean High School, I had a class that I taught, which was really trying to get students to identify skills that they already have, but that they're not making money off of. And as a way to make money, now you have a way to earn the means for food insecurity and be able to develop different ways to strategize and just advance yourself. So the class was something that's called strength training together. Some people know it as body pump, but it is choreographed exercise. And so we will all watch these kids, they'll have football practice, they'll be dancing, they'll be doing whatever. And I'm like, man, you know, you're really good at that. Why don't you get paid to teach that and be an instructor and, you know, be a community hub for people? And that was essentially the initial plan of what we did and kind of how it connected everything together. But what it came down to was soft skills, like how to interview, you know, how to not to burn bridges if you have practice and you have a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and how to manage those relationships, not just show up to work if you're going to be the starting player. So those conversations and relationships manifested still today. And even though only 5 kids got their license to go and teach at the YMCA, there was a plethora of more kids that was like, hey, I got a job because of you. Because you told me, you know, even though that I'm 14, I need to act like I'm 16 if somebody expects me. You know, if they ask me if I want to have a job, then, you know, they also had these experiences or opportunities that I could do. And I took myself out of the game just because I read on the paper I might not meet the qualifications. So getting kids to think about more, and now that's pervasive in everything that I do today.
At every level. And that's a good example. And this was cited in the article in the Tulsa World. But you also are the founder of the Oklahoma chapter of Black Men in White Coats. So I'm picturing black men wearing white coats like physicians. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Black Men in White Coats, what it aims to do, and how you brought it to Oklahoma.
Yeah. So this to me is so cool because it's all goes back to intentionality. And when I look at whether it be my residency program or my medical school class or just trying to get through the ranks of organic chemistry, and I look around and there's this kind of unique phenomenon that I've noticed. You see in a class and you see someone who looks like you, maybe they're from your neighborhood, or you have this unique experience that you know that you shared together, and you give yourself like the universal nod. And so you see someone who looks like you, you give that universal nod, and it's like, okay, we're going through the same thing. We got this. And less as I got through the ranks of medicine, I was nodding less and less. On the football field, the wrestling mat, I would see people that look like me. At the PTA boardrooms and school boardrooms and in medicine, it got less and less. Or the only people I would be nodding with would be patients. And I would be there like, oh, you're the physician? Oh, wow. You know, that's a surprise. So Black Men in White Coats was a call to, hey, let's take a strategy, let's use data, and let's see if we can change the narrative. And in a positive way to figure out, how do we increase the number of black males in medicine? And to me, what that in lies is a couple of different truths that we have to figure out. Is not only doctors wear white coats, medicine is almost kind of like band, right? So you get in the band and they're like, well, what chair are you? What instrument do you play? Like, it's a whole nother dichotomy that exists that a lot of people don't know about. And that's what's exciting. And so as we look at things like the World Health Organization and physician population density ratios, like, what does that look like for a neighborhood? If we look at, okay, well, how many more general practitioners do we need that look like this population that we should be recruiting at the age of 13? And to see an organization that has a focus in doing that, I'm like, oh, I'm all about it. So unfortunately, you see something like this and you're like, okay, well, where do I fit in? You know, I'm just a student. And the call is, if you are interested and you're passionate about it, then now you have the opportunity to be the expert. And in some aspects, some people see that as a negative. They call it the minority tax. Like, just because you're the only person in this space that looks like this, you're going to carry the brunt of the weight. But at the same time, it's like, well, then why not? You know, then I'll study. Then I'll grow to be the expert, so I'm not a liability. And I think that's something that I've accepted, and I'm excited to give to other people, too. It's like, now we can do it together, and we can split the tax in half. And where else do you get to do that? So Black Men in White Coats is an organization that allows me to express that love for how to recruit physicians, future physicians, like we recruit Heisman candidates in football. And to be able to innovate in that space, it gets me excited to get back into medicine. It fills my cup.
Let me reintroduce you. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Christopher McNeil, who's an emergency medicine physician, also getting your master's in public health or health administration.
Yes, public health.
Public health. Wow. And also is an elected member of the Union Public School Board, where he's been serving for more than 2 years. So an ER physician, a school board member too, but the founder of the Oklahoma chapter of Black Men in White Coats. And Chris, so you mentioned is splitting the minority tax, but being an opportunity to role model and encourage more young black men to enter healthcare fields. How does it operationalize? Like, are you working with middle schoolers or high schoolers? Is it the pipeline program, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I think what's unique about this space is at what point in time is the best time to be exposed to medicine in a positive way. With that, like, there is a plethora of data to actually figure out, well, where does the pipeline need the most work? You know, is it early on in elementary school? Is it in middle school? Is it in high school? And then the question that comes up is, when do you kids decide that I'm going to a school that has the best basketball team instead of the most honors classes? And so being able to start having those conversations, it makes it really unique because every school in Tulsa, even though they might be under the Oklahoma State Department of Education, they exist in communities, and every community is different. And so the strategy that may exist at Union may not exist at Jinx, because Union may have a very robust NASA STEM elementary school presence, whereas Jinx has a really strong focus in cultures and different cultural experiences that kids can have as an early pipeline. So it's really cool to see, like, at the end of the day, like, okay, if you were to ask a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you ask them at different locations and different stages, the answers that you get just based off of their environment. And so what I think Black Men in White Coats allows me to do is to be able to operationalize in that space in terms of what do you need, who's not represented at the table, and if we talk about medicine specifically, how do I get students interested? And how do I find out who would even fit the mold to be able to think about, hey, this is something I might want to do, but I had never been exposed to it.
And so are you doing it in Tulsa Public Schools, Union Public Schools, or is it more of like you hold open meetings and people hopefully show up, or you publicize it well?
Yeah, so this is really cool. So we use existing infrastructure. So there's a program in Tulsa called the Earn a Degree, Graduate Early that TCC puts on. So it's the EDGE program. And the EDGE program for most schools starts at ninth grade. So in ninth grade, you get exposure, and it's typically designed for students that are first in their family to go to college, et cetera, in those realms, lower socioeconomic status, et cetera. So being able to see that these students have the opportunity to build resilience, and you need resilience for organic chemistry by the time you get to college. So to be able to have those pockets in high school and you're exposed to that class, it's really cool to see what they're able to generate downstream. So there's five schools in Tulsa that have the EDGE program. And what I try to find is who and what are your recruitment parameters for the EDGE program? Who gets in? Who knows about it? What do the kids look like? And at the end of the day, who goes through the EDGE program and graduates and becomes physicians? So those five schools are KIPP, Tulsa, Union, Memorial, McLean, and Sand Springs. And so those are the schools that we have targeted in a stepwise approach. And the after-school program that we use is called Youth Medical Mentorship. So that way, once we get an ideal representation of Black males, now we can switch to Burmese. Now we can switch to any population to figure out, hey, who's not represented and what strategies, best practices can we use to make sure that they have an opportunity to get exposure.
I love that. One of the reasons Black Men in White Coats exists is because essentially, as you point out, African-American folks are typically very underrepresented in medical professions, especially as physicians. It's true for Black men and Black women. Mm-hmm. But do you cite a figure or statistic for how underrepresented African-Americans are in the healthcare workforce or specifically amongst doctors?
Yeah. So it's super interesting just because it's as we look at the population in the United States, and people love to get lost in statistics, you know, 13% of the population being African-American. And then it's estimated that anywhere from 2 to 4% of that Black population is then physicians. And so what kind of gets lost is, are we talking about 4% of all Blacks? Are we talking about 4% of all doctors in the United States? And so what it boils down to is 4% of all doctors are going to be Black, but 13% of the U.S. population is Black. So it's two statistics that are kind of embedded into one, and that can sometimes be confusing because when you go, what's important is, okay, if I go in a hospital or if I go into my hometown or if I look at where these doctors graduated from, the American Medical Association has a program called Doctors Go Back to School. And it's a day where the doctors are supposed to go back to where their alma mater. And so if we look at, you know, the demographics of those doctors, who or what school did not have any doctors that are representative of the neighborhoods? And so it's really cool to kind of think, if we work backwards, who missed the calling, or, you know, just being able to figure out what can we do better to make sure that that happens in the future.
Chris, one of the things the Tulsa World noted about you is you're an elected official. You're on the union school board. What's it like to be a physician and be on a school board? I mean, I suppose you could ask that about an accountant or a lawyer or someone in manufacturing, but there's nothing inherently special about being a doctor, except that you do work with the public. And as you point out, as an emergency room physician, you're often the first medical person someone comes into contact with. So what's your experience has been like? I'm sure it's hard to generalize, but so you have board meetings and doing budgetary things and figuring out helping with curriculum or those kinds of things?
Yeah, you know, it's really what this is what I would say for just local politics in general. Like what most people see is does not do the actual job justice, because there are so many intricacies to what makes our city work, to what makes these schools work. That is so cool. So I can go with one specific story on this, and union decides on what contracts they're going to make with different food vendors based on what the kids like to eat. And so the kids are taste testers for, let's say, chicken fried steak. And I'm just sitting and I'm thinking about, say, four plates of chicken fried steak, and we're going to taste each one. And based on the student's palate, we're going to decide that for 16,000 families. And that, to me, like, that's intentionality. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what the price is. We're going to figure out what you want based off of what makes you excited to come to school and eat this chicken fried steak. And I love chicken fried steak. So that's, like, that's a big deal to me. So, but even the nutritional aspects of, like, now we can build the rest of the meal around this because we found something that entices the students. So as a physician, being able to see the other social determinants of health that come into equity and having kids having skin in the game to their school, to this. Like, I love it. And to know, like, what education has done for me and to see how the school utilizes that to empower kids. I'm like, man, there's so much of this that you don't even think about in our jobs as an emergency medicine doctor. Like, very seldom do I get to ask a kid, like, what school do you go to? And are you involved in the taste testing? You know, they're definitely not missing a whole lot of absences, you know, if that's something that they take pride in. And you can see that, and it's tangible. And you can see the kids who don't have it. And that is also, you know, really telling of the trajectory that they have. So that's one example, but I would say just the complexity of everything. It's so nice to have not only diversity in terms of where people are from, what they look like, but diversity of thought. And so to be able to sit next to other board members, and they all come from different walks of life in terms of accounting, in terms of teaching, in terms of being able volunteers and running nonprofits, like, that's kind of our Justice League. And we're able to make decisions that affect everyone because we can represent everyone really well.
Chris McNeil, thank you so much for coming by. It's really been a pleasure to meet you and talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much, sir.
Dr. Chris McNeil is an emergency medicine physician, a member of the Union Public Schools Board, and a Tulsan to watch for 2023. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.